podcast from Kunstraum Niederösterreich.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Im Kunstraum. My name is Frederike Sperling and I'm the artistic director at Kunstraum Niederösterreich. Throughout 2023, our program will platform many different voices and critical perspectives on the ecological crisis. Our first exhibition, Matrix Buddies, works as a sort of foundation in this regard. Together with the artists Agla Bitvitut, Seba Kalfukueo, Katerina Gobi, Nuna Inescu, Josefa Ntiam, and Sophie Otikal, we are scrutinizing the relationship between human and nature. But to be fair, an art show is only one side of the coin. We were curious to learn how a natural scientist would think of some of the themes in our exhibition, and so we invited Eduard Fadev, a biologist specialized in marine microbiology. Welcome, Eduard.
Hello, everyone. Hello, Frederike. Thank you very much for having me here. That's an exciting opportunity for me, and also thank you for showing me around the exhibition. It was very interesting.
Eduard Fadev is from Israel, where he studied marine sciences and fascinated by the role of microorganisms in the ocean. In 2015, he joined the Max Planck Institute for Marine Microbiology in Bremen in Germany for his PhD. His dissertation focused on investigating microorganisms in waters of the Arctic Ocean and included two Arctic expeditions for sampling. In 2019, he joined the Microbial Oceanography Research Group at the University of Vienna, where he currently investigates various mechanisms of interactions between marine microorganisms and their impacts on the oceans. Eduard, I'm truly excited that you're here and to learn more about the messy world of bacteria and viruses, of the zones of the deep sea, among other things, from you today. And as you told me that Matrix Buddies is the first ever contemporary art show that you've visited in your life, I will in turn admit that my knowledge in biology is ridiculously limited. So I guess let's have some fun here. To start, I would like to ask you to briefly outline what your research entails specifically and what it is that a marine microbiologist does.
Yeah, so I don't know, but perhaps for some listeners it would be a surprising thing to hear, but there are a lot of different microbes in the seawater, and every milliliter of seawater contains more than 1 million cells of bacteria. So there's a lot of microbiology going on in the oceans, and therefore there is a lot of things to study. And first of all, I think it's important to mention that the life originated in the oceans, and the marine microorganisms or marine bacteria are the one that started producing oxygen that actually allowed life on Earth many billion or some billion years ago. So they are basically the foundation of life on this planet. And although they're very tiny, but they play major role in the global biogeochemical cycles, and in one of the main things that we as humans are interested in the functions of marine bacteria is, or marine microorganisms is their ability to absorb carbon from the atmosphere. So basically, photosynthetic microorganisms from the ocean can, through photosynthesis, can absorb the carbon that we are emitting, and therefore the oceans are very important part in all the discussions regarding how do we deal with the climate change and with the anthropogenic influence on the environment. And therefore, understanding different processes within microbes helps us to better understand how they can regulate, for example, removal of carbon. And those microorganisms interact between each other, and those interactions influence how their microecosystems are developing, but also on a larger scale, how that affects things. And those molecular interactions between the microbes, that's exactly what my research is focused on.
Okay, thank you. You just mentioned a couple of terms that I, and perhaps also some of our listeners, are less familiar with. So could you, as a start, maybe define some of those terms, like what are the differences between bacteria, microbes? What do you include in the term microorganisms? So I guess we need to start a bit more basic here.
Yeah, so microbes or microorganisms, it's more of a generic term for all stuff, all living organisms which are in the micrometer size, so to say.
Mm-hmm.
So this is more microbes or microorganisms is a more generic term mm-hmm. that we use in conversations. However, within microorganisms, they can be from all three domains of life. So we know, probably most of the people know, that there are the bacteria, mm-hmm. which is the domain of life,
mm-hmm.
And there are the eukaryotes, to whom we also belong. Those are the eukaryotic cells that can be also microorganisms, but also all the larger organisms and plants are all eukaryotic cells. But there is another domain of life, which is called archaea.
Archaea?
Yes.
Okay.
Which are less known, but they're also there, and there's a very broad domain of life. So those are three domains of life that comprise the, so to say, microorganisms in the ocean.
Mm-hmm.
And you also mentioned the viruses. It's a tricky question. So it depends. It's more of a philosophical question, because viruses are, by themselves, they're not a living organism. So they encode certain processes that can come to life once they infect cells, but them as particles are not really alive. So you can address them as another domain, but probably they're just part. The way I see it, they're just particles with some genetic information that mm-hmm. once they're getting into cell, they make the cell do things, but they're not alive of their own.
Perhaps you can help me illustrate this a bit more specifically. If we look at the human body, for instance, where do you locate bacteria and viruses, and I guess also the more generic term than microbes? Also, for instance, we at the Kunstraum, we fermented our own kombucha. We also fermented water kefir. So to what extent are bacteria part of our body, part of what we drink and eat in our everyday life?
Well, they're everywhere. They're really everywhere. They're flying in the air. They're the water we're drinking. They are in our bodies. There's a lot of them. Depends on the part of the body, but there's a lot of them everywhere. So we are basically a walking ecosystem. And a lot of the things that we are doing or our organisms are doing are actually mediated by bacteria. The best example is our capability of processing food. That's for many substances, it's not that our cells are doing that, but the bacteria that we are growing inside our intestines that are actually doing all the processing, because they have capabilities that we don't have. So this is kind of win-win. They enjoy living inside us because it's favorable conditions for them, and we benefit from what they are capable to do in this kind of.
And if we zoom back into the origins of life, or the beginning of life on Earth, on this planet that you also mentioned in the very first question already, there's also the notion of viruses being sort of relational agents, so connecting different organisms, connecting different forms of life. And I'm wondering what was needed for life to emerge, and what role did processes like bacteria or viruses connecting with each other play in this?
So I think there's more than two questions. It's a fact inside. So let's try to break it down. Regarding origin of life, the most simplistic form of life, simplistic in quotation mark, are bacteria. So they were here first, so to say. How they evolve, or where did they appear from, it's a debatable question. So we don't really know what is the spark that brought life, but we definitely know that bacteria were the first one. And then they started evolving, and through this evolution process appeared bacteria that can harvest light. Basically doing the first photosynthesis, and this byproduct of this photosynthesis, which is harvesting light for your basically as an energy source for your internal processes, they were producing oxygen, and suddenly there was increasing amount of oxygen appearing on this planet. And then when there is an abundance of something, the evolution will always, not always, but it will drive towards some kind of organism that can benefit from this abundance. And that's how microorganisms that can benefit from oxygen appear, basically, the one that can respire. So it's an evolutionary process where the viruses are coming into. So as I said, viruses are basically particles. They're kind of agents that have, so there are a lot of different viruses. Some of them are based on DNA, some of them are based on RNA. So those are two different types of molecules that can encode processes that cells can read and execute. So basically RNA is, so to say, already intermediate stage. It usually are less stable molecules that the cell can read and immediately execute what is written there. And DNA is more of a long-term encoding. All our cells contain both DNA, and from the DNA there is an RNA that is afterwards used by the cell for different processes. So those viruses, they basically encode those molecules, and by infecting different cells and reproducing inside the cells, they can also, in some situations, grab with them chunks of the DNA or the RNA of the same cell. And basically, there are vectors that allow exchange of DNA and RNA between cells, in addition to just infecting them. And they are definitely drivers of evolutionary processes. So a lot of new functions cells acquire through viruses that infect them. So they're definitely, so of course, in after Corona, we all think of viruses as such a horrible thing.
Yeah.
But it's not necessary. So that's not the way how we look at it.
As a biologist, as a scientist.
So viruses are definitely one important driver of the evolution. And they have key functions in the environments we're living in and in us. And yeah, so they're not such a bad thing. Most of them are nice.
Okay, I guess the image of viruses still needs to be rehabilitated.
Yeah.
But focusing back on your main field of research, the oceans. The oceans, as I learned, are a big container of oxygen. So could one say that life originated in the oceans?
Yeah, definitely. Life originated in the oceans. The oxygen came way later, some 1 billion years later. But yeah, life came from the ocean. So the origin of life was definitely in the water.
And zooming into the word, into the term life. Life is manifold. There are plenty of species on this planet, more and more becoming extinct, obviously, as well. But I would like to focus a little bit on the similarities between different forms of life, and more specifically, what connects us as humans to animals.
So I have a scientific answer to that.
Yes, please.
We are 100% animals, and there is no question about it. So I think this is also it's part of the exhibition here, that I also sense the idea of looking at humans as separated part of the nature, but I don't see it this way, and I think in general the scientific community doesn't look at it this way, because we are biology, we are living organisms, and we have way more similarity to other life on Earth than dissimilarity. So in that sense, we are a part of this nature. The other thing is that we were able to overcome certain barriers that other forms of life or other organisms were not able to do, in the sense that we're developing technologies, we are able to overcome certain natural processes that constrain other animals, and that is exactly where we are different. But this is different on a more on a consciousness level of us, rather than on a physiological level. Because I mean, as coming back to COVID, with all the technology that we had for 2 years, the whole world was constrained by this virus that was flying around, and so we are at the end of the day living organisms, but we are living organism that is capable of doing much more than others. So we are capable of changing landscapes, we are capable of changing this entire planet, and this is exactly where we are different, and that's exactly where we need to see how we, and this is also the part of this exhibition, to see how we are capable of maintaining the nature and maintaining our environment, but by continuing being us. So it's not that we are going anywhere, or we are not evolving into being more wild or whatever, but we need to find a way to manage the environment in a way that the life here will become more sustainable.
Yes. Maybe we can zoom into that more specifically. What impact does our behavior in the global north have on these ecosystems? And maybe also more particularly in the context of the oceans.
Yeah, so of course our behavior affects the oceans. The extent to which it affects it, we still not fully understand. But our effect, probably the most significant effect, is a bit indirect, so to say, which is the ongoing climate change, that the clear cause to it is our carbon emissions that are increasing all the time. And this increasing emissions also affect the temperatures on the planet, and therefore also affect the temperatures of the oceans, which get warmer. And there are a lot of organisms in the marine environment that are very sensitive for temperature changes. One of the more obvious examples are corals. So coral reefs, one of the reasons that they are disappear is because of the rising temperatures in the ocean, and of course different changes in the temperature have also more global effect on oceans, because if you take the Arctic Ocean as an example, increasing temperatures of the water cause melting of the ice cover of that ocean, which was actually the topic of my PhD research, where I looked into the effect of disappearing ice on the microbial communities in the water. And these increasing temperatures in the Arctic allow also organisms from other parts of the global ocean to migrate into the Arctic Ocean and take over the ecosystem there. So there's a lot of chain of disruptions that are happening as a result of those changes. Yeah, of course, there are also other processes through which we interact with the marine environment. So we exploit the oil that is on that is below the sea floor, and that produces also some spills of oil, and that affects the ecosystems, the marine ecosystems a lot. We have the overfishing, which is very relevant for especially the Mediterranean Sea. Yeah, so there are many different ways of interactions, and are many different ways, direct and indirect, that we affect the marine environments.
In order to end on a more positive note, what measures are being taken or are in planning in order to protect oceans?
Yeah, so I would like to link it to the exhibition here, which is one of the
artworks.
This is your terminology. I don't have it. One of the artworks was dealing with to what kind of creatures humans should evolve to become part of nature. And I think that we had a discussion about it, and I was thinking a lot about it, because this was a very different perception of how evolution works to me. And I think the way I concluded it to myself, that this evolution will be not physical, but more on a consciousness level. And I think this is the key for our coexistence with the nature, and our ability to get back to be more related to the nature. I mean, we don't need to give up on what we have achieved, but we need to learn how to coexist, and we learned how to overcome all those natural barriers that constrain other animals but do not constrain us. And now we need to learn how to constrain ourselves in a way that we want to affect the nature, and we let the nature stay as is. So in general, ecosystems are in many cases very, they can resurrect themselves.
Resilient,
yeah, that was the word, thanks. In many cases, just leaving the nature to do its thing, it's already sufficient. For example, in the marine environment, we have what is called marine protected areas. There are more and more of those around the world. It's basically areas of the ocean, or usually those are coastal environments, which are completely closed for fishing and recreational activities, and there we just let the nature do its thing. And animals, and we see that very fast, animals come back there, they colonize this area, fish are reproducing, and it becomes a healthy marine environment that affects also the areas around it. So suddenly the fishermen that had no fish to take out, suddenly they have more fish in the water, although there is a chunk of water that is now, they are not allowed to go there, but those fish are migrating from this source ecosystem, and we are benefiting from those things. So in some cases this is true, that we just need to let the nature do its thing. In other cases there's a breaking point where the ecosystem is already not capable to restore itself, that we changed it so much that it cannot restore itself. So for example, if we have a highway, the fact that we will just leave it now won't make it again a forest, right? So there is an a more active intervention that is required from us to bring the ecosystem to a point from which it can start to restore itself. And this is exactly where science comes in, because to be able to bring the ecosystem to those states, we need to have an understanding, and we need a lot of research and a lot of scientific observations to be able to establish those ecosystems in a way that they will be resilient and will kind of sustainable for longer term period of time.
Well, to summarize it in a way, to what extent are you optimistic about the future?
I think in general I'm optimistic because I think that there is an increasing understanding that we need to change things. The question is, and there's also a lot of knowledge that emerges all the time. The scientific community produces, there's a huge effort in trying to understand the ecosystems and trying to find technologies and solutions for the problems. The question is how fast those things will be implemented, because even in some cases where the knowledge is already there, things still take a lot of time, and it's the way I see it, a lot about it is not the science, but the general opinion about things, and that's where education comes in part. And I think talking about those things, as we are doing now, this is very important, bringing those topics into conversation of the general public is very important, because once people start thinking about those things, once they start forming opinions and understand that thing needs to be changed, that's where the change will come from. It's not necessarily will be top down from the government saying that and that. Mm-hmm. It will be the next time you're getting on the plane thinking about all the CO2 that you are producing. And therefore, I think in general, I'm optimistic because I do see a change. I just hope that this change will be fast enough. Mm-hmm. And that we'll see.
Yeah. So it's about translating natural scientific findings and realizations, observations into terms that are understandable by people who are less interested or sort of not experts in sciences.
At the end of the day, climate change is not for scientists.
Exactly.
It affects all of us. Yes. And therefore, it's important that all of us will be aware of that and see how we help in our small world to deal with this situation.
Well, Eduard, thank you very much for translating your sciences to us today. Thank you very much for being here and for being our guest.